Hello, and welcome to the Off Kilter Quilt. My name is Frances. I'll be your hostess. Hello, and welcome to episode 159, the bum 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 bum. Okay, I'll stop. Yes, it is the theme from Rocky episode. Yes, and you know what that means. You know what that means, don't you? Yes, I finished the mosaic quilt. Finished it yesterday. Oh, if you just heard a little snorting, that's Travis, who is just 20 pounds, by the way, coming to sit with me and snort like a little piglet. He's sweet, yes. But back to the more important thing, the mosaic quilt is done. Finished it yesterday, got the binding on. The label's on. It's all quilted. Actually, kind of in reverse order, though, the quilting label binding. It's quilted. It's done. It's on the bed. We slept under it last night, and it was really warm. Yes, I don't know if I used a different kind of batting, but it was a very warm batting. I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased with it. Very happy. To have it done. Not that I did not enjoy the process, which, by the way, took 3 years. When I was making the label, I thought, you know, I had no idea when I started this. And so I just went back through blog posts and went back to April 2012. And even on that blog post, I was already showing you completed blocks. So I must have started even before then. So crazy. 3 years. I'm glad I finished it. I'm still wildly appreciative of everyone who sent me fabric to help in the process, help me on my journey, the mosaic quilt journey. And today I'm happy to have a clear table. All that's on my table is my cutting mat and a rotary cutter. And I think, oh, and 3 block of the month envelopes. Several years ago, my mom and I started a block of the month quilt from grandmother's attic, and I have 4 blocks left to do. And I thought that just seemed fun. Just cutting out fabric and sewing it together. I don't know. Kind of seeing a little ironing in there. Seems fun to me. Just something a little bit different. There are 4 different blocks, so that'll be neat. But I enjoyed the quilting of the mosaic quilt especially, and I feel like I learned a lot from it. I will tell you, I did do some, there was some unquilting involved in the process, but not a ton. And if you look at the back of the quilt, there are some pleated areas, but they don't bother me. I'm trying to just use that gauge of what's going to bother you forever and what will you not give a second look at once you're done. And it's not that I won't ever look at those pleats, but one, they're on the bottom of the quilt, and 2, it's a very densely quilted quilt, and I just felt like, you know, once I started unpleating, I mean, it would just take us so long, and it just wasn't that important. I'm not trying to get this in a show. I'm not, you know, the muggles, as we know, don't know the difference. And there was one block on top, one of the big white blocks that I did redo completely. And it took, you know, it took several hours to get it done. But that would have bugged me. I just knew that one would have bugged me. And so I felt good about redoing that. But the ones on the bottom, and there were some on the bottom, I should say, as well, along the border, the inner border, the the half square triangle border, which Jay told me what that is, sawtooth border, perhaps is what we call it. In any event, there was also there some pleating that I did deal with, and I knew I would not be happy with. But in any event, I felt like I exercised good judgment in terms of what was okay to let go and what really needed to be changed. So that was a good project. It was interesting. I was listening to Sandy over at Quilting for the Rest of Us a while back, and she was talking about, you know, unfinished projects that she has, UFOs she has, but she's really thinking about what, you know, should she really hold on to them, which I think is always a good question, because there are projects that you lose your zest and zeal for, you know? And so why not find someone else to do the project, or, you know, put all the blocks and the instructions and whatever you can put in to a bag. Go to your guild and say, somebody do this for, finish this for a charity quilt. But I never felt with the mosaic quilt like I lost my zeal for it. It was just, you know, other things sort of cut in front of it in line. And I'm okay with that. That's actually very much a part of my creative process. That is, I tend to have some, you know, as a writer even, have several projects going at once. And when I kind of lose my zest and zeal for one, I will move on to another one. But I always come back around, and I usually finish stuff. So I feel good about having finished this. And yes, it feels like a victory. And I hope you liked my singing. I don't even know if that's really how the song goes. It is Sunday, by the way, March 1st. We woke up to freezing rain. And you know, I don't complain about the weather. Now, you know who does, and that is Tanisha over Crafty Garden Mom. So if you need to complain about the weather, and I think a lot of us really do right now, go over to Tanisha. She just put up a new episode pretty recently, I feel like in the last couple weeks. Very fun, a very funny story about, I think it's Sam, her older daughter, trying out for a talent show. Recommend you go listen. And another new episode from Allison over at Within a Quarter Inch. And it's been a little while since she's posted, and so it's really good to hear from her as always. And she always makes me laugh too. And we've emailed a little bit. We're really, she's been teaching like a lunchtime class. I don't know how regularly, but she's been teaching some at a local quilt shop there in Wilmington, which is probably Wilmington, I don't know, is an hour and a half, 2 hours from where I am. And I thought, you know, she's teaching at lunchtime. Maybe if I get, you know, on one of these days where both the boys are out of the house until 5 with clubs and after school stuff, I'm like, maybe I could go down for one of Allison's classes. I would love to do that. You know, you do really feel like you are friends with people, fellow podcasters as well as listeners, and that we do have this community, and it's really nice to meet people in person. So I might get to meet Kristen, a longtime friend and listener who is in Raleigh, but she's here on work. So fingers crossed we may be able to get together while she's here. That would be fabulous. We have been email friends for a long time. Anyway, so yes, the weather is horrible, but I don't complain about it. Not necessarily because I'm so good and nice, as Tanisha claims, but I'm just above it all. At this point, I'm just so ground down by it. And, you know, this is typical Southerner complaining about a little snow. And I just, you know, I know it's been much, much worse for people, but we are really ready for spring. And we are going to get a reprieve on Wednesday. It's going to be like 65 degrees, which is good. It will melt the snow. Anyway, boy, I've got Travis tucked into my side here so very nicely, and I am loath to get up. I should have done this before to read comments, to comment on comments, but I'm going to do it. He's looking at me like I've betrayed him. All right, hold on. All right, I'm back. Yes. I want to mention, by the way, as I'm pulling up the show notes, that in the show notes, there are a couple things I mentioned in the Quilt Diaries, and of course don't even know what I'm talking about, but I clear these things up in the show notes for this episode. And I wanted to tell you, oh, they're pictures of the mosaic quilt, of course. They're not the great documentary pictures that the man will take for me probably later today, but they will do the trick, I hope, to let you see the full picture of the mosaic quilt. I also have to say that I really have no idea what I said in the first quilt diary, because I recorded it a couple of weeks ago, and so it may be a total repetition of what I've said here in the introduction, except it couldn't be because I didn't have the quilt finished, the mosaic quilt finished. Anyway, so I'm sorry. I repeat myself anyway, so hey, we're used to it. Okay. Episodes 158, the leaf motif episode, got comments from Noni. And Noni, I got to get on my EQ7 stuff and see if I can incorporate those files. I'm sorry I haven't done that yet. It is on my list. It's Sunday afternoon and I'm staying home, and that's one thing I'm working on is my list. I just feel, I don't know, I feel like there's so much to do. And sometimes it's like I forget what I really want to do. I need to set my priorities. I need to get my priorities straight. Oh, I heard from Kelly the Fifth. It's so good to hear from Kelly the Fifth. And I heard from Jenny in Oz. And she says, yes, you can presume I am from Australia and not skipping down the yellow brick road with Dorothy. But Jenny, I'd like to think of you as both, if that's okay. And by the way, she mentions that season 2 of the British version of Broadchurch will show in Australia on Sunday the 15th. And I'm assuming, because this comment was February 11th, that she means February 15th. So I'm hoping it will get over here to the States soon. I would love to see it. If anyone knows, let me know. Heard from Kati, who had not listened to the episode yet. And we know that's fine. Don't bother. Don't wait. I mean, listen to the episode on your own time, but comment right away. As soon as you know there's an episode out there, just come and comment. And she votes yes in terms of me writing a novel about quilting or a quilting series. And where she works, there is a store called Jack Wills. That would be my kind of store. Okay, sorry, I got a little bit interrupted by Jack. Not a bad interruption, but where was I? I think Cotty said that she works in Greenwich, Connecticut. There's a store called Jack Wills, and guess what? It's supposedly British, of course. Wouldn't a store called Jack Wills be British? Of course. Heard from Adele, and she has an idea. Since one of my characters in my quilting novel series is a columnist, it would be really neat if it was set up with a mystery quilt that is revealed in her columns throughout each book. And I have to say, that's an excellent idea. Could I pull it off? I don't know. But it's a really great idea. So thank you. Heard from Kristen. Hope to see her very soon. Heard from Debbie. Debbie, QuiltCon report. We need it. Can't wait to hear all about it. I hope you had a great time. Heard from Bonnie, who thinks that we, the quilting community, should answer the question that why quilts matter fail to answer. Why do quilts matter? Let's collect statements from regular people explaining why they feel quilts matter and combine them with the historical perspective and present it as a panel discussion between all you wonderful quilty podcasters, or as a series of discussions spread across the podcast. I think that's another great idea. I have to think about that. Yeah, I'm going to put that on my list because I really like that. Thank you for that idea. Heard from Mandela, a first-time commenter, who has been commenting in her head for a long time. Totally get that. Now, Mandela has some interesting Broadchurch information. The fictional town is the real town of West Bay in Dorset and on the south coast of England, so not northern England as I had thought. Those accents, she writes, that you're picking up on are the TV editor's idea of how the rural Southwest sounds. The landscape is as pretty as it looks on the screen. I live about 15 miles away, so I'm very lucky. And she says the second series is showing there in the UK now. So that's interesting. And what's also interesting, just the thing about the accents, if you live in the South or married to a Southerner or a little bit Southern yourself, one thing that will make you crazy is watching movies set in the South. And of course, I mean the South part of the United States, the Southern states, and the Southwestern states as well, meaning Texas. Everybody sounds like this from Charleston. And you know, Charleston's not that big of a city, but really, it's really crazy making when people who are supposed to be, say, from North Carolina or Mississippi or what have you all sound like they're from Charleston. So we watched, there was a really bad Colin Firth movie that came out a few years ago called Main Street, which was actually filmed in Durham, and I think set in Durham, maybe even, I don't know, it may have been a fictional town, but it was filmed in Durham, which made it exciting to look at. Durham also, of course, the setting for Bull Durham. But watching, listening to a lot of Brits trying to do a North Carolina accent, they did not do so well. So anyway, it wasn't a good movie. Heard from Sue in upstate New York, who said that when she watched Why Quilts Matter, that she liked the show when she watched it for free. on the quilt show. And she says, I guess I just like looking at the quilt, and especially since I'm such a huge fan of Carol Breyer Fallert. Carol Breyer Fallert Gentry's work. And I am too. And she's certainly one of the prominent quilters featured, and we were glad to see her. But as Sue points out, what she agrees with me on is that we, the rest of us, were left out. And she also says, maybe I should go feed Travis more so that he can grow into the dog we all think he is. Oh my goodness, Travis would really appreciate that. I have to give a big thanks to Ballard Quilter. Oh, and I was hoping I would have a name instead of just an email. We'll just call her Ballard. Anyway, she sent this amazing bibliography of books about quilt history. And if you're interested, I would recommend that you go into the comments section for 158 and see. I have a number of these books, and a number of them I have never heard of in my life. So I'm really excited to have this list. And I think I've talked about before, I'm planning to do another website, which I think will be francisquilts.com. And partly this will be whenever my quilting series comes out, however it comes out. This would be a site that, you know, sort of platform for that series, but also a platform for my interest in quilt history and some other things as well. The man and I have talked about doing some videos, very short docs, about some of the quilting stuff that's going on in here in North Carolina. But that is a place where I would definitely have a good bibliography of history books, quilting history books, and I would definitely use this list, and I will definitely be reading books from this list. So thank you so very much. Heard from Michelle. Says her husband is watching The White Queen. I have not finished watching it. It is a bit racy, so I have to like only watch it at times where people aren't going to walk through the room, especially younger people. And I'm happy to report that Michelle has given me permission to unquilt if I don't like it. She does it all the time. No quilt police here. Good. Yeah, sometimes it's funny. You think you wouldn't really need permission, but I think it's interesting how the quilt police idea can work. I mean, the quilt police in your own head, where you kind of feel like, you know, I don't know, it's okay to unquilt, and you're thinking, no, just leave it, don't be so, you know, don't be so anal, don't unquilt, you know, and they just go, but just do what's gonna make you happy. It's quilting, it's supposed to be fun. Got a nice long comment from Jay. Jay's birthday was in January, so for her, January's a happy month. Sometimes January's a happy month for me too. Sometimes I carry a lot of New Year's energy with me into January. It did not happen this January. And Jay had a great idea. If I buy one of those giant houses in Warren County, I can renovate it, a small part of it to live in, and make the rest of it a quilt retreat, and then we could all retreat together. I love that idea. I've gotten so many good ideas in these comments. Thank you. And I'm happy to report that Jay has written the quilt the tutorial for the basket block, the next block in my sampler quilt, and just has to take the photos. Jay, have you taken them? Because I'm ready to get going. Heard again from Ballard Quilter. Ballard Quilter, tell me your name. And she encourages me. I talk about this in the Quilt Diaries. I said, someone encouraged me to donate quilts to the homeless. And it was Ballard Quilter. And yes, this is something I really want to do. And what she has done, assuming Ballard Quilter is a she, so many of us here are she's, she made a very warm and brightly colored flannel quilt last year, and then left it on a bench in a neighborhood park where homeless people often sleep. And I know a spot out near a small shopping center that borders on some woods, and I know that back in those woods is where a lot of homeless people camp out. So that would be my thought, that once I made the quilt, I would just take it over there and sort of leave it at the opening in the woods. That's my thought anyway. And yes, and then she said that she left it on a bench where homeless people often sleep, and that the quilt was gone when she returned to the park a few hours later. So that's just lovely. Yes, I want to do that. Maybe we should, I don't know. No, I'm not going to start a movement to do this. I hopefully will make a quilt to leave for a homeless person. I would like to do that. Heard from Jenny F. 2014, a longtime listener, first time commenter. At least she thinks she is. She doesn't think that she's ever commented. Anyway, yay, I'm always so happy to hear from everyone, but first-time commenters are especially fun to hear from. And she really gives a cheer out. I can't think of what I'm saying. Shout out is the phrase I'm looking for Sandra Dallas and her books. And if you are not familiar with Sandra Dallas and her quilting books, I would recommend that you read them. Jenny particularly likes The Persian Pickle Club, and she has read it probably 10 times. And I really like Sandra Dallas too. She's a really good writer. You know, I think sometimes we will read quilting books just because we love to read about quilting, and the writing is not always good. I think Marie Bostwick is a good writer, and I think Sandra Dallas is a very good writer. So I highly concur with you, Jenny F. 2014. Give Sandra Dallas a read if you're looking for really good literary fiction about quilting. Heard from Philippa, just commenting, hadn't listened yet. And heard from Cottie again because she did listen and then forgot what she was going to comment on. So she's going to listen again. Yes. So anyway, she just wanted to give me a thumbs up for not going to the church dinner that I had. There was some peer pressure to go to. I am working through this stuff in my own head with this friend of mine who is a very dear person. And I feel like sometimes I'm maybe judgmental because I feel like she's pushing me, and it's occurred to me that she might just be trying to welcome me to these things and make sure that I know that I'm welcome and that I would, you know, that she will be there and would love for me to go there too. So I may be misinterpreting. I am trying to have a compassionate and non-judgmental heart about these things. That's really hard for me. It's really hard. Anyway, thank you, everyone, for all your wonderful comments. Let's get on with the Quilt Diaries. Quilt Diary Day 1. It's Tuesday, February 17th, 2015. Do you know how I know it's February 17th? Because there's actually a little thing on my recorder that says 2/17. So all these times when I've recorded quilt diaries, I'm like, well, it could be the 17th, could be the 18th. I could have just looked. Who knew? Well, now I do know. There shall never be doubt about the date ever again. We've had a snow day today, and sometimes here in North Carolina, that means that it snowed a scant quarter inch. And everything shut down. But today we actually have icy roads. And in fact, I've been sitting, not all day. I feel like I've sat almost all day. It's 5. And I have like 3,000 steps on my Fitbit. Laura's going to catch up with me. I'll never catch up with Terry. But I've been number 2 for a good solid week because I've been working a lot. But you know, today, well, I quilted. I read. And I just kind of, you know, it's a snow day. Sometimes you got to take a day off. Now, I've been shooting for and generally meeting a goal of 15,000 steps a day. I would love to do 20, but I just don't have that kind of time. You know, that's maybe if I were Terry and running 15, 20 miles an afternoon. I don't know. What is it you're doing, Terry, other than just putting the rest of us to shame? Now, saying this, you know what? Terry will like leave a comment going, oh, you're doing so great. Oh, you're the best. Oh, you could beat me any day, because she is so very nice. But she's always ahead. Well, except when she hurts herself. And we don't want that. Terry, we do not wish for that. You just run, girl. You go, girl. But I am in second. And then there's always Laura or a couple other people who are just like right on my tail. So if I take a day off, it's so funny how your head gets. You know, you get into this competitive mode and you're like, this is just Fitbit steps. Let Laura get in second place. Just do it. So today I kind of am. Although for all I know, Laura's also having a snow day. In any event, it's been a lazy day. Everyone's been home. I have been sitting here. I think that's where I started this. A good amount of time and have not actually seen any cars go past on our road. According to the man who has gone down to the end of the driveway, our mail came, so at least one car went by. But he says that while there's some slushiness on the road where the sun is hit, there's a hill, from our house at the end of our road going to the main road, and he said that's just ice. It's in the shade and it's just ice. So we suspect the boys may have school off tomorrow, although the snow and ice are over, the precipitation events are over. Everything's going to freeze up tonight, and there you have it. So fortunately, we've got milk, we've got eggs, we've got everything. We're good, because I do a big weekly shop on Fridays for the whole week. What else to tell you? Oh, well, here's my sad story of the day. So making good progress on the mosaic quilt. Now, here's the only thing that's bugging me. Well, two things. And the pleating. And I haven't had huge pleating problems, but I've had a couple. And not so much with the outer border, which is what I'm working on and am almost done with. But what's happened is in the inner border, there have been a couple of places where I was unaware that there was pleating in the inner half square triangle border. That pleating then extended out to the outer border when I came up and quilted that. So there have been a couple of places where I've had to dequilt, unquilt these half square triangle things, and that has actually not been easy. It's a quilting where you're retracing lines, which means you have double quilted lines. So that's been a kind of labor intensive process. Fortunately, I have one more spot. Okay, so where am I? Yeah, so just back and forth. So finally got to this place where the major pleats were out, making good progress, doing a much better job of safety pinning and making sure everything's secure, going slowly to check and make sure I wasn't creating new pleats. I am 2 feet away from the finish line on this thing, and yes, I ran out of thread. And I bought this thread. It's Gutermann's thread. It's at Joann's, but I can't get there because the road is frozen. So I still have work I can do on the quilt. The back needs to be cleaned up. And there are a couple spots in the main blocks that need, there's one block where there's pleating on top of the block, which, you know, I've gone back and forth about fixing, but probably will fix. And I also notice in this last 2 feet, I have some, in the inner half square triangles, there's some pleating on the back. And I think, especially since at this point I've got time, and the Westminster dog show's on tonight, second night in a row, and we want to see who gets best to show, that I would have time to unquilt that. And I think I will go ahead and do it, even though the way the pleating is, it won't be a problem for the outer border. I think I could finish at the outer border and not have any more pleating, but, you know, why not at this point? Just make it right. So, but yes, it was funny. I was just watching the spool of thread get depleted, and I might be able to make it. And then I just realized, no, you're not going to make it. But many more things to do before this quilt is truly done. I do have the fabric for the binding. It's a big quilt, so it will take a little while to bind. But we're almost there, girls. Almost done. I was just talking to my mom this afternoon. She's like, well, what are you going to do next? I'm like, I don't know. Jay says she has the tutorial for my basket block for the sampler quilt. Almost done. So I probably will do some work on the sampler quilt. I don't know. And then it might be fun just to do a little lap quilt for somebody. Just something simple and straightforward that doesn't take 2 or 3 years to finish, and where the quilting would be fairly simple and straightforward. Just for fun. Well, not even simple and straightforward, where the quilt would be easy to put together. And then it would be, of course, sort of a good canvas to practice my quilting. I'm watching a woman walk her dog down my street, and I had wondered, should I try to take Trav out? And watching her sort of slide along the street, no, Travis is out of luck. Anyway, I enjoy a good walk, and if it were just snow on the ground, I would go out. I don't think I would take Travis that far. We went out the other day. It was really, really cold on Sunday. It was like the high. It was like 18 degrees. And we went out about 3 o'clock, and we ran. I mean, this dog sprinted. We've been running a lot. Not for long distances, but it's been so cold that when we start out, we just Travis is running, I'm jogging, just to get warmed up. And then, you know, he stops and sniffs, and we stop, and then we start again. So it's actually been really good. I'm sort of enjoying it, and my knees seem to be tolerating. So who knows? Maybe I'll become a long-distance runner in my 50s. I don't think so. But you have those sort of dreams as you're jogging along at, 2.5 miles per hour. Like, wow, I could run a marathon. Yeah, I don't think so. Anyway, that's where I am. I wanted to tell you, I'm reading this really wonderful book. I got it used. I don't think it's in print anymore. It's by Gwen Marston, who you may know, Miss Liberated Quilting, fabulous person. It's a person who really got me into quilting, showing me a way in. I loved quilts for many years before I ever heard of Gwen Marston, but it was her book, Liberated Quilt Making, which made me think, oh, I can do this. I can ignore the math. And that was very helpful, and I love her, and she's one of my heroes. And Joe Cunningham, who I talked about a couple episodes ago, they wrote a book together called Mary Schaefer and Her Quilts. And Mary Schaefer is a quilt maker. I don't know that she's still alive now. She might be. She was born, let's see. Well, she was born in 1910, so she has probably passed on. But she was interesting. She, sort of a kind of average American housewife, although apparently very talented at needlework. And she got interested in quilting just because she liked needlework and handcrafts, and bought some kits that were very popular back in the day. I think this was like in the... Okay, so she got her first kit in 1949. And then this was interesting. She actually, in the early 50s, her son came home from the military. Some friends had a party for him out at the beach. And, no, so this was 1956. So I'll just read from you. Ronald's friends held a beach party to celebrate his homecoming. Later, when Mary cleaned out the trunk of the car, she found a beach blanket that no one had claimed. The damp, sand-laden blanket was a red and white pieced quilt. And there's a picture of the quilt in the book. It's very nice. And in fact, the cover of the book, she not only cleaned up and repaired the quilt, but she then made a reproduction of it. So, and I just thought this was a lovely little testimony. Mary, to whom needlework had been so important, recognized the time and care invested in the old, worn quilt. She was saddened because the unknown quilt maker's once proud work had sunk to the point where no one wanted it. So Mary laundered and repaired the old quilt, and her concern for its maker persuaded her to do everything she could to restore its dignity. She resolved to find the name of the pattern and to make a new quilt like the old one. Making the new quilt proved easier than finding the name of its pattern. Nevertheless, the creation of a new quilt based on the pattern of the old one was a challenge for Mary. But she made a beautiful quilt, and I just thought that was lovely, that she just understood how much work goes into these things and wanted to honor the woman who made the original quilt. I thought that was so nice. One of the things when Mary Schaefer started quilting, and I believe she lived in Michigan, and when she started quilting, it was in the early 1950s is when she started getting the quilt kits. And then later she started doing more original work. There wasn't much going on in the quilt world at that time. As we know from our quilt history, there was a big boom in the 20s and the 30s that kind of faded in the 40s around World War II for a number of reasons, from women going to work, fashions changing, and that sort of rustic country look that a quilt might signify had given over to much more modern, sleeker look. Fabrics had changed. There were more synthetic fabrics. So women were doing a lot of garment sewing, but not much quilting. But there were women who were quilting. And it was sort of like an underground thing. And Mary started looking for quilting magazines. She subscribed to a lot of sort of quilting newsletters, not quilters' newsletters, but these sort of zines. I mean, what they were essentially were little homemade, hand-stapled magazines called like Aunt Kate's Quilting Bee and JB's and Little and Big and popular needlework was really more like an actual magazine. But anyway, she was trying to find the pattern of this red and white quilt, which she never could, and she ended up calling it Linden Mills after a historic mill in the town where she lived, because she thought that the pinwheels and the pattern looked like mill wheels. So, in any event, so, but that kind of got her more and more interested and also more drawn into this underground quilt world, which was the only kind of quilt world there was at that time. And she started getting involved in round robins, where they weren't making quilts, but women, groups of women, were passing around quilt patterns, because there weren't very many books and there weren't many magazines, and not easily accessible magazines. And so people would copy over patterns and then send them, and then you would get like three patterns, and you would copy over the patterns sent to you and then add your own pattern, and they would go round and round and round. And so that's how people were exchanging block patterns and quilt patterns at the time. And here, I thought this was nice. It was inevitable that women writing to each other at such length would communicate more than technical data. Friendships formed and grew. For some women, correspondence with other quilters was their only outlet for their feelings, which led them to reveal surprisingly intimate family situations or to ramble about everyday problems. Always, however, there was quilt talk. And I thought that was interesting, and sort of compare and contrast to the situation that many of us find ourselves in today, where there's just a wealth of outlets for quilters. There's a wealth of information, particularly in a lot of communities. Although I'd be interested to know, it's like, what quilt communities are you a part of? For me, because I'm not active in a guild here, although I was planning on going to the guild meeting last night, and I'm disappointed that it got canceled. The bad weather moved in late yesterday afternoon. And so really my quilt communities are online, with the exception of, if you call my relationship with my mother a kind of quilt community. But otherwise, I mean, it's with you guys. You are my quilt community. And although I'm not active on Twitter with the quilters every once in a while, I will check in on Twitter to hear what they're talking about or read what they're talking about, and occasionally chime in, but for the most part don't. Twitter just moves too fast for me. It's too fast. It's too modern. But that is a community that I feel sort of peripherally a part of. But mostly it's the podcasting, both as a podcaster myself and listening to other people's podcasts, and then the comments. But I don't have friends close by who are quilters. Now, maybe if I get more involved in the Quilt Guild, that will change. And I'm kind of ready for that to change. It would be really nice. I do have my one friend, my one neighbor, Debbie, but we're not close friends. We're dog walking friends, and I like her very much, but she doesn't seem to desire community when it comes to quilt making. So I don't know. It would be nice to have friends on the ground, and maybe I will. Maybe that will happen soon. So what kind of quilt communities are you involved in? What are your connections? I think it's interesting, because I feel like, again, that although what separates us and Mary Schaefer and her round robin circle of friends is, on the one hand, they were writing letters. They were really dependent on one another for information in a way that we here in the podcast world perhaps are not. We get information from one another, but but there's tons of information out there. But at the same time, I do feel like it's a small community. It's not, for me, my community is a small community of quilters, as Mary Schaefer's was. Anyway, it's this book I'm really enjoying. It is, again, it's called Mary Schaefer and Her Quilts, by Gwen Marston and Joe Cunningham. It came out in 1990, and I've just started reading it, but I really, really have just enjoyed it. And the quilts she makes, she was very interested in history, very strongly interested in quilting history as well as American history. And her quilts, she loved to do, reproduce traditional patterns. And she did beautiful work, and her quilting itself is beautiful. Although I think later, as she continued on as a quilter, she was more interested in the piecing than the quilting itself, and would send her quilts out. So anyway, that is what I'm reading right now. And I don't know. It's good. It's just it's interesting to be to read about one quilter's life. Because oftentimes in the quilt history books, what you're reading about are trends in quilts. Or if you read, as I've been doing, the project books, the documentary project, the state projects books, you get, it's overview, and you get little stories, little snippets of the quilters' lives from the people who, usually their families, their descendants, that brought in quilts to share, and you get little stories. But it's not the same as really being immersed into one woman's quilting life. So very enjoyable stuff. So I guess the only other thing I have to talk about today is I woke up this morning kind of composing an email in my head to the American Quilt Study Group, sort of introducing myself and asking about a couple things, because they're very knowledgeable. It's not a very, the listserv is not wildly active. I wish it were more active. And so, who knows, maybe my questions will activate some discussion. But there's also things that I'm really interested in knowing about. And one, North Carolina does not have a quilt study group, a state quilt study group, like a lot of other states do. And there's some, Virginia, I don't know why it doesn't surprise me, has a very active groups that, and is still doing documentation projects. Arizona is doing documentation projects. And there seems to be some growing interest in doing African American quilters documentation projects. I just read an article that was in, that I found online. I should put the link in the show notes. If I think to do that, I will. But a woman, I think, in Arizona who is really, she's African American and she really wants to do documentary work on African American quilts. And I think there, as reading, so many of these documentation projects, we've talked about this before, what these are is, starting in the early 80s, Kentucky was the first state to do this, where the document, where there were quilt, state quilt documentation projects. So essentially, over a set period of time, in different communities, a call would go out saying, bring in your quilts, very oftentimes to libraries. Bring in your family quilts, bring all the information you have about these quilts, and the quilts would be documented. They would be photographs, the name, the name of the quilter, the name of what the quilter called the pattern, as well as the documenters might say what tradition, might note what the, if there might be a difference. The quilter might say, well, this is what we call it, or this is what Granny always called it, but it actually might, that also might be a traditional name. And that would be noted too, and if there were any stories associated with the quilt. And the quilt was measured and described, and typically there would be people, quilt appraisers there, who could really get into the details of the quilt in terms of description and provenance and all of that. So Kentucky was the first state to do that project. North Carolina did one fairly early. I think they started in the late 80s, and then there were more and more. And so this was, I think most states have done one, and oftentimes there were books that were published as a result. There were oftentimes, and this is true in North Carolina, after the project was completed, there was a show at the North Carolina, I think, Museum of History. And not all, obviously, not all the quilts that were documented were hung, but, sort of the best and the brightest were hung. And then there was also a book produced as a result. And many states followed in step in the 80s and 90s. And it'll be interesting to me if we see another round coming up of these sort of documentation projects. But I can tell you, having read the North Carolina book, of the quilters represented, there are only two that are African American. And I need to reread the introduction. They may talk about this, and I doubt it was any sort of malicious plan on the organizers' part. But it may have been that they went the way they put out the call for quilters to come to this community center may not have reached African American communities. And again, this was a different time. This was, these quilt projects were taking place 30, 35 years ago. And in rural parts of the state, there still was probably quite a bit of division. Not necessarily hostile division, but some division between black and white communities. And the committees may have not been savvy enough in terms of knowing how to reach African-American communities, and it may have been that they did a lot of outreach to African-American communities and there just wasn't enough trust on the part of African-American families and quilters to bring their quilts in. I don't know. This is all conjecture. I'd be curious to know. But it's surprising to me, both in the North Carolina book, where there are just two African American cultures represented, and in the Ohio State Project book, there are zero. And there are, you know, there are a lot of African American communities in Ohio, a lot of families after emancipation migrated to Ohio, a lot of African American families migrated to Ohio. So that to me is a little bit shocking. Of course, there's going to be more history about white quilt makers and their quilts, just because their quilts, you know, it helps to actually own the quilts that you make. Quilts don't always last. Textiles are notorious for degrading, et cetera, et cetera. So there may be a lot of reasons, but it does seem to me that it is time, especially here in the state of North Carolina, to do some documenting of African American quilts and quilters. All this to say, one was my my issues that I thought I would bring up in my email, should I write it, is one, you know, what are the possibilities of starting a quilt study group here in North Carolina? Now, the problem is I'm not really a quilt historian. I'm really interested in quilt history, but I've only really been reading stuff about it for the last year, so I'm not sure I'm the person to spearhead anything, but maybe if I put it out there, maybe there's some people who are interested who would sort of take the reins of putting together a North Carolina quilt study group. Fingers crossed. And two, I thought I would ask, you know, what about projects that were specific, documentation projects specifically aiming to quilt African American quilts and quilt makers. And three, I had another thing I was interested in. I think just asking about how do you do history? You know, I don't know. I ordered a couple pamphlets and got them. They were just a couple dollars from the American Quilt Study Group. One was about how to do oral history. And I don't know if I've mentioned this, but Meg Cox posted something on Facebook from the, not American Quilt Study Group, but the American Quilt Alliance. Did I mention this last week? I might have, but I might not have. In July, I think it's like July 17th and 18th, they are having a quilt oral history, how to do it, kind of meeting in Northern Virginia that I plan to go to. I'm assuming tickets will not be prohibitively expensive, but I'd really like to do that and talk to the man. And Jack will be at camp, and so the man and Will could come up if they wanted and go to a baseball game or go to the museums while I go learn about oral history, because I love oral history. So I'd like to know more about how to do it. And I did get a pamphlet from the quilt study group. And the other is about doing history, but that felt a little more out of date. But I really know very little about how to do research, so I might throw that out there. But I did. I woke up this morning kind of composing that in my head, and then about lunchtime, like, I don't even remember what ideas I had, but they came back to me slowly. So I'll let you know if I get any response to that. So I guess that's my news for right now, and it's Tuesday, and I guess I'm going to try to get a podcast out there in the next couple days. I don't know if I'll have much more news, but maybe things will thaw out a little bit tomorrow, and I'll get more thread, and maybe my big news will be I am in the process of binding the mosaic quilt. Wouldn't that be something? Okay. Well, that is it for now. I'll talk to you later. Bye. Quilt Diary Day 2. It has been a long time since Quilt Diary Day 1. It is Saturday, February 28th. I'll try not to be too froggy. It's not early in the morning. It's like 10 o'clock. But we have had a lot of days off because of weather, and we have been sleeping in late, and for me late is like 8:30, which is nice. I feel like I'm getting caught up on my rest. I know everyone else truly is. I'm looking out across a front yard full of snow. The roads look clear, so hopefully I'll be able to get out of the house today and do a little grocery shopping. Notice how I'm not complaining about this winter wonderland. This actually, so we've it's been weird. It's like we got snow on Tuesday that was totally unpredicted. There was no call for snow. And I woke up Tuesday morning, and looked out. And it just lots of pretty snow falling, and school got canceled, and then it was delayed on Wednesday, and Wednesday night this big storm came in with wet, heavy snow, beautiful snow, but wet, heavy snow, which burdened the trees, and trees went down, and so we lost power Thursday morning at 1 a.m. and had it restored Thursday night, so around dinner time, so about, you know, let's say 14 hours later. And it wasn't so bad, you know, especially in the morning. The boys slept in, the man, you know, went put sleeping bags over their regular beds, and and we had extra blankets, and so that's not a problem. And then getting up, just did lots of layers and a hat. And, you know, our house actually did not get down. I think toward the end of the afternoon on Thursday, the temperature was 59, which is not really that cold. I mean, it's so funny how you experience cold differently in different situations. So 59, going outside to take Travis for a walk, if it were 59, I would not be wearing long johns and a hat, but inside the cold has a different quality. I actually, like, during Thursday morning, just kind of cleaned, and, you know, fortunately we can, you know, light our gas top, our stove top, so we were able to have coffee and eggs, and the man made the boys pancakes when they got up, and so that was all good. And in fact, I was in the process of ready to make dinner when the power came back on, and we were just gonna cube steaks and rice, and again, stuff that you can cook on the stovetop. So we were all good. Toward the end of the afternoon, there wasn't a lot to do. I was very lazy, and I think what happened is I started to read, and Will got on the couch with me, and we covered up with quilts, and we're reading, and then kind of napping, and, you know, I think I could have gotten up and done more chores, and maybe could have gotten a lot accomplished, but was just got that really sort of lazy, hibernating kind of feel. And it's also nice. I mean, Will's 12, and, you know, I don't know how many more opportunities we'll have for snuggling up on the couch. And Travis was between us, so he was our little human pad, heating pad. Oh, we consider him human. We'll consider him a person. So, but he was sort of nature's heating pad. And so that was all very nice. And then we have, and this, I recommend this very highly. It's a Red Cross radio, and it's a crank radio. And so we cranked up the radio and mostly listened to ESPN Sports because it's Will. But it also has a USB port. I think you have to crank a lot for that to work, because I tried powering up my phone, and it didn't really seem to. I wasn't ever able to increase the battery level, although when I had the phone plugged into the radio, the battery level didn't seem to go down much. So that was good. Fortunately, my laptop was fully powered and I wasn't using it. So when my phone level got down kind of like to 20%, I just plugged it into the laptop and you know, got the power from there. So it was fun and in some ways. It really was toward the end of the day, especially because, you know, I've got my neighborhood listserv, which really one day I'm going to write a novel about. It's hilarious. But people were checking in and saying, we don't have power here. We have power here. You know, we have a downed tree. There's a road in our neighborhood called Pinecrest. It backs up onto Duke Forest. It's beautiful. It's our neighborhood is really interesting because every street is different. And there are a lot of modernist houses, and they do a house tour every year, so Preservation Durham, and people come and walk through the neighborhood. Our house is not a modernist house, although there are modernist houses on our streets, but that's on our street, and that's one of the things I love about the neighborhood, is every house is kind of different, and that's because when the neighborhood was originally built or subdivided, the land belonged to Duke University, and they cleared it, and it was for Duke professors. The first generation of owners were all Duke professors, and you had your land and you could build however you wanted on it. So it's pretty cool. But down on Pinecrest, there's some very large houses. I'm very modernist. Think Frank Lloyd Wright in terms of just lots of glass, lots of interesting levels, and they're beautiful. And but there are lots. It's called Pinecrest for a reason. There are tons of these old pine trees, and they came down. And I think that's why we didn't have power for 15 hours. But yeah. Anyway, so but everyone on the listserv was checking in, and suddenly, and it was funny. And I would check Facebook every once in a while to see what other neighborhoods in Durham were getting their power back. And you felt like the march of power was coming from the south to the north, where we are in town, and just sort of one street at a time. And so we were getting like, oh, it's gonna be any time. And then about four, the street next to us, Montgomery, got their power, and we were like, all right, so any second we're gonna get power. And we were seeing trucks, electric company, Duke Progress Energy, going up and down the street. And then people started posting on the listserv that power was not gonna, that Duke was now, if you called the electric company, if you called Duke Power, they were estimating that our power would come back on at 11:45 Friday night. So, I mean, more than a day later. And so it's starting to, get a little dark outside, and it's getting a little colder inside, and suddenly, and I, you know, and the man and I were like, nah, it's really, there can't be power one street over, and and really, it's gonna be a day, it's gonna take another day for us to get power. It's like they're just saying that just to, because one, it's a big area, so it may be, that's when everyone's going to have power, but we'll have power. But still, part of me is like, oh, I've done this before. This happened. There was a huge ice storm in 2002. Will was 6 weeks old, and we lost power for 5 days. And we had an office space. We moved into our office space, and then when my friend Amy got power back, the boys and I stayed over with Amy. The man came over and showered and what have you, but he's so manly, he slept in the office. But it's really kind of, it's a real drag. I mean, I'm sure some of you listening have had the same thing. And at first it starts out as this adventure, and for us too, we have a fireplace that we have, but we don't have a ton of firewood. Our firewood guy went out of business, and we've had fire, and we haven't found a new firewood guy, but we have plenty of firewood for sort of recreational fires. But so we were like on Thursday not building a fire because we, if it, just what if we were out of power for days? We needed to be careful. So anyway, so that was all kind of getting a little, yeah, like, oh my goodness, the adventure is over. I just want to be warm. But sure enough, power came back on around dinner time. And it's so funny because it's just like you realize what a weenie you are. And I think I have some vague notion that I could survive in any situation. And I mean, you can, and especially when you live with a man who's an old Boy Scout and, has tricks up his sleeve. But at the same time, I so much like my furnace and my oven and my machines and what have you. So that's where we've been. And, the funny thing is that Monday it's supposed to be in the 50s, and Wednesday it's supposed to be like 70 degrees. And then kind of, it's been funky, and it's actually then it's going to go down. The typical, I think, the average temperature for this time of year is really about 56 degrees. It's but usually very temperate, but we are in the throes of climate weirdness. So here you have it. But what about me as a quilt maker? What's going on? Well, a number of things. I should tell you, so like I said, it's 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, February 28th, 2015. I am about, I would say, 30 minutes away from having the binding attached to the mosaic quilt, with the exception of where the two tails meet. I have reviewed my Craftsy class about bindings and borders, and I don't have the teacher's name in front of me, but she's lovely. And I got to the part, and she shows three different methods of sort of bringing your binding, your tails together. And the first one is the one I've been using, and as she notes, it gives you a little lump. It's not the one she recommends. But the second one looks very doable. Now, and I didn't even look at the third one because I know what that third one is, and I can't describe it to you, where you're putting your tails at right angles to each other and sewing them together. I've tried it. I'm going to have someone in person show me how to do it. This one, the second one, I can't describe processes to you, but you are fitting the tails together, but with less, the way that you cut the tails on an angle, that they come together without so much excess fabric and come together very neatly. So it's going to take me about 30 minutes to get to that place where I'm ready to bind it. Bring the tails together. I will need to review the video, and then I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to, I've got to finish sewing in the label. Yes, I have a label. I put everyone's name that I had and could remember who gave me fabric for this quilt on the label, and there is space left for everyone I forgot. I hope I have not forgotten anyone, but yes, so I'm going to get the tails attached. I'm going to finish sewing in the label, which won't take very long, although I'm a very slow hand sewer. What's nice about this binding that I'm putting on, and the thread I'm using is a dark blue that disappears into the dark blue of the outer border. And so I'm not as diligent about checking to make sure the needle has not gone all the way down through the outer border. Do you know what I mean? You're trying to keep, when you're attaching the binding, you're really trying to stay in between the layers. And that always slows me down because I'm always checking the other side to make sure my needle has not gone all the way through the third or top layer, since I'm working from the bottom. I've gotten a little lazy about that, but still, that really, it's hard for me not to check, and that really slows you down. And I'm not nimble with the needle, although I like doing needlework or hand work, but at this point I'm not very good at it. Anyway, I've got obviously two sides of the label are sewn into the binding, and so I have to do the other two sides, and then the washing with many color catcher sheets. I hope I have them. I've got to go to the store today, so if I don't, but that's I actually pre-washed the big blue, the outer border is a blue batik, and that got pre-washed. And any fabric that looked like it might bleed got pre-washed, because I have learned my lesson about batiks in particular, that you really should pre-wash those. So I think it's possible that the mosaic quilt will be done today. By the time I do the introduction, you will know. So we will know. The mystery right now, it is a mystery, but really by the time you get to this quilt diary, you will actually be celebrating. The mystery will not be a mystery. You will know. But yeah, that's my plan, is to finish it up and then do the introduction and hopefully get this podcast episode posted either today or tomorrow. And then get back on a weekly track. All this cold weather has really made me think that I really do want to start doing some quilts for the homeless community in our area. Somebody, when I do readers' comments, the person, I will be able to tell you who, says something about that she does quilts for the homeless, and it's a really good thing to do. And so, I'm sort of, with this weather, I'm kind of inspired, as I'm kind of wondering, as I'm post-mosaic, and at that place, we're trying to figure out what it is I need to do next. I may kind of start working on some blocks for the homeless guys around here who could use a quilt. Let's see, what else did I want to tell you? Oh, so, okay, first of all, it's been so long since I recorded the first quilt diary. I have no idea what I talked about, but I know I've told you that I became a member of the American Quilt Study Group, and this week I finally worked up my courage, and I think I joined about a month ago, so this is kind of sad that it's taken me a month to do an introduction, new member introduction, and got a very nice, very warm response. But a couple things in my email that I posted to the group, I introduced myself and asked why there wasn't. So the American Quilt Study Group is a national group, but there are local study groups, like Virginia has like three or four that, you know, meet on a regular basis, but North Carolina does not have a group. And so that was why I said, why doesn't North Carolina have a group? It seems kind of odd to me that we don't. And secondly, I was talking about these state project books I've been looking at, the state quilt documentation projects, and it's very curious to me that there's so few African-American quilters represented. In the North Carolina state project book, which is just called North Carolina Quilts, which was done in the late 80s, of the 10,000 quilts documented, only 60 were by African-American quilters, and only two appear in the book. And so I was curious about that and wondered if anyone had any thoughts about that. And also, are there documentation projects going on now? You know, because one of the things, I was talking about this with Joy, who's the director of the Folklife Institute where I volunteer. We were talking about it, and you know, she pointed out, you know, first of all, that, you know, there's no sense that there was an effort to exclude anyone. But to include people, you have to get the word out to them, first of all. So, and you know, and it's funny to think about the 1980s in the South. So you're 20 years past the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Act. And you think, well, of course, you know, and Bill Cosby is everybody's dad and all of that stuff. You feel like you're in a very different place than we weren't once were, especially in the South. But some things, trust can be hard to rebuild. Or not really rebuild trust, but build trust. In any event, you know, I know that a lot of times when the project, the documentation project, would go into communities, when there were documentation days, they were done in libraries. Well, you know, in North Carolina, for a long time, libraries were segregated. And even after integration was the rule of the law of the land, a lot of African Americans were not that comfortable going into the libraries, places where they'd once been excluded. And in fact, Joy was telling me that up in Warren County, at the Warrenton Library, it wasn't really until the last few years when they got a black head librarian that black folks started coming into the library. And they said, we've been kind of waiting, you know, to feel welcome. So you can, and this is, you know, 2010 or so. So you can imagine in the 1980s, there are a lot of wounds that are kind of still healing. The response I got to that question was interesting, and I got a lot of offline emails, and some people said, you know, telling me is that oftentimes, even when African American quilters were reached, they did not want to participate, and that's interesting to me. And we could speculate why that might be, but I would suspect again it may come down to trust issues. And I think that some of that, and I hope a lot of that has changed. And, you know, other people emailed and talked about how for so long in their area, you know, there was the African-American Quilt Circle and then the larger Quilt Guild, and the two really, there wasn't a lot of overlap, and that's really changed. And I know that's true here. We have the Durham Orange Quilt Guild, and then there's the Durham African-American Quilting Circle. And a lot of the women from the quilting circle are also members of the guild and very active. So maybe things are changing, and this is a time to really take a new look and make another effort to get these quilts documented. I hope so. Anyway, so I threw that out there. Oh, and also about a book that I was looking for research that had a really hard time finding, even though supposedly in print, it seemed to find any. I couldn't find any existing copies, and this is about quilt history, and I got a lot of help with that too. So I'm very pleased with my initial putting my toe in the waters of the American quilt study group. And what was kind of neat is, I watch these videos at the international. On the International Quilt Study Center website, and some of the people who responded to my emails are people whose lectures I've watched, some of them more than once. So I was feeling very fangirly, like, oh my goodness, Jonathan Gregory responded to my email. It's so funny. It's so funny. Anyway, so I'm excited about that. I'm thinking a lot about that. Anyway, I'm excited. So that's something else that's going on in my quilty life. And what else to tell you? I do not know. Oh, I finished a really good book, The Book of Unknown Americans. And I want to say the author's name is Christina Henriquez. And I also want to say that it won the National Book Award this past year. I will put a link in the show notes. But it's wonderful. It's a collection of linked stories about people who live in the same apartment building in Delaware. Most of them are Mexican immigrants. Most of them are documented, not all. And they're also people who are also from Central America. And it's just a wonderful book. It's very moving. I cried like a baby at the end. I highly recommend it. It's definitely one of the best books that I have read in a while. I also recently finished a book by Sarah Waters, who is British, and it's called The Paying Guests. And the first third, I was absolutely enthralled by it. The writing is wonderful. The writing is so good. The last third, I was skimming to get through it. And it's one of those books, if you go on Amazon, it's got tons of reviews and tons of 5 stars and tons of 1 stars. As you know, I saw on Facebook someone had like posted, here's, a list of great advice. And one of the pieces of advice was read the 3-star reviews. And I think that's right. I think that's where you find the really balanced reviews of books. But anyway, so I don't know. You may have read it and loved it, and I loved part of it. It's very racy, I should say. But, and it's set in 1922. So it's, it's interesting for those of us who love the Abbey. it's a slightly different setting, but a time that those of us who love the Abbey would be familiar with. Speaking of the Brits, I hope you have been watching the Great British Bake Off, which on our PBS station comes on before the Abbey. We have loved it. You can actually, if you haven't watched it, go to PBS Online, and they have some of the back episodes. I don't know if they have all of them, but really, really fun. Really fun. And my friend Catherine, who's from Ireland but lived in London for a long time, now she lives in Birmingham, Alabama. And she's not from Ireland, she's from Northern Ireland. That's different. Anyway, she's a big baker, so she kind of got us turned on to that. And we've had so much fun watching it. So check that out. It's actually, I think tomorrow is the finale. What else to tell you? What I'm reading, what I'm watching. There was one other thing, and I'll put a link in the show notes. The other day, I guess Tuesday, when we had the snow day, and that's when I finished up the quilting on the mosaic quilt, and I watched also PBS Online. PBS Online, and actually, I think you should, if you Google it, it's like PBS Video, it really takes you to where you want to go. They have American Masters. That's one of their series. And they have the show about August Wilson, the playwright. It's fascinating, but what's really great about it, if you like theater, tons of excerpts, excerpts not right, but video footage from plays and these amazing actors, but particularly from
I have never seen an August Wilson play perform, but I have read his plays. And so there's you see footage from Joe Turner's Come and Gone and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and Fences. And the one with Fences is James. Oh, it's a scene with James Earl Jones. It's incredible. So if you like theater, this the August Wilson American Masters show is a great one to watch because you get to see so much great theater embedded in that particular episode. So yes, so I will put a link. I have not heard from Debbie yet about QuiltCon, and I am waiting to hear all about it. I have seen some pictures of the quilts. I was not overwhelmed by the winning quilt. To be perfectly blunt, conceptually, it's interesting, but in the real, it's like, eh. But I saw pictures of other quilts that I liked very much. And there were, it's such a mixed bag, you know, and we still continue to have the question, what is modern? You know, what is modern? And, but yeah, some definitely cool and really beautiful stuff and other stuff where you're just like, I don't know, not exciting. But that's true of, I guess, all quilts, really, right? I mean, there's stuff that floats our boats and stuff that doesn't do a thing for us. And that's because we contain multitudes. We are large. We contain multitudes. Yes. All right. I'm going to go finish quilting up this quilt and, you know, I'll get back to you. Well, once you're listening to this, I'll get back to you next week, but I will eat my tail and I will do an introduction. But again, it's always weird to talk about it because you've already listened to the introduction. Oh my goodness. My brain is collapsing. All right then. Let us move forward and onward. Let us go in peace. Remember, life is short. Quilt first. Bye.